Welcome to episode 11 of Rick Brown's Story Podcast. Now that I'm done with Boutique America, I'm also slowly trying to get back to the U.S. I did have several follow-up assignments and also with Press International picking up new clients. I was very busy and I really enjoyed living and working in Japan. Being in the U.S., of course, getting educated there and now working, that's all good. But the Japanese in me really rekindled my love for Japan during the Boutique America project. The exposure to Japan that both Ai-chan and Melanie had during this time also played a big role in getting grounded in Japan and its heritage and their ethnicity. Both speak Japanese, and that all started from these times. Chick also felt getting back to her roots, a nice unsettled feeling, I'm sure. The years following our move to California must have been really tense for her. Series of frustration, just knew everything. So this return to Japan and spending a few years was a good respite for her as well. Boutique was such an intense project. I was going through a withdrawal period. One project I got intimately involved with after Boutique America was to work with Mitsukoshi Department Store to establish a complex known as the World Import Mart. Almost an offshoot of Boutique, setting up a huge import-only retail operation inside a huge complex in Ikebukuro called the Sunshine City. It's still there. When I say I got involved with World Import Mart, my specific assignment was to accompany a buying team Mitsukoshi and a few other retail operations put together to the U.S. on a shopping spree. The delegation was headed by Mr. Ikeda, then a chairman of Mitsui, and Mr. Okada, head of Mitsukoshi Department Store. He was a vice chair of the delegation. I don't remember the exact duration, but we traveled across the country buying citrus products in California, furniture in the South, and I remember visiting Corning Glass Works in Upper New York State to arrange a major purchase. Needless to say, since we were there with open wallets, we were treated well and graciously at each stop. It was, again, a tremendous opportunity for me to expand my network across the U.S. and also for me to witness Japan Inc. up close and firsthand. Interesting story. One time we were staying in a hotel in New York. Mr. Okada was due to arrive late that night to the hotel. And when he did arrive and enter the lobby, which was filled with rows of Japanese businessmen in dark suits, bowing deep as Mr. Okada entered. It was a huge spectacle. Everyone else in the lobby was wondering who the heck this gentleman that garnered such respect was. It was around this time that I got to experience the Ginza nightlife with generous expense accounts and chauffeur-driven cars. It was unreal, but I'm glad I got to experience this once in my life. I got it out of my system early. So we're done with the shopping spree, and that was the end of my involvement with World Import Mart, the last hooray in Japan before returning to California. Around this time, one day, I was approached by a gentleman from Walt Disney. He was a Disney executive sent to Japan to be the liaison and manage the planning and execution of the Tokyo Disneyland project. He wanted to talk to me about a potential job. He asked if I would be interested in being considered for a marketing position for Tokyo Disneyland. Who does not want to work for Disney? Needless to say, the only prospect then was to go back to LA and work again for a Press Aid Center. It was definitely an opportunity worth pursuing. Kind of funny that I am now back into this Disney thing. Remember what I said about meeting a Disney animator and how she helped me get immersed with the world of Disney through her work and her friends while I was still going to college then. This Disney executive and I traveled to the U.S. a few times for interviews with headquarters executives. I was still very young, with maybe Boutique America the only prominent item on my resume. I had good background. I earned a stripe handling Boutique America, bilingual, bicultural, now very well connected in Japan, and had a graduate degree to satisfy Disney's HR department. I thought I could handle the job. But I sensed over time that those back in headquarters were looking for someone more experienced in marketing, many more stripes, especially in fields more relevant to the world and the brand of Walt Disney. I was not rejected outright, but they were very candid, and it was not difficult to see the writing on the wall. They were probably expecting someone more savvy and with confidence, a true Disney or amusement marketing executive. I certainly didn't have that appeal, nor qualified, based on what I had done with my life up to that point. It would have been a very interesting job being part of the team to start up a Disney theme park in Japan. Somewhat glamorous even. Unfortunately, I did not get the job, but appreciated the offer though, or I should say opportunity. Had I gotten the job, it would have been a very interesting ride. I and Melanie certainly would have loved the opportunity to say to their friends, "Hey, my dad works for Disney." Just as a reference, Tokyo Disneyland, which opened in April of 1983, and its companion park, the Tokyo Disney Sea, opened in 2001, are the only Disney parks not wholly or partly owned by Walt Disney Company, although Disney has total creative control. Then another person that I met through Boutique was a gentleman named Berkeley Baker. He was with a company called Teledyne, a $3 billion industrial conglomerate, which exhibited in Boutique America project. Once Boutique ended, Teledyne stayed in Japan and put on an exclusive trade exhibit by themselves, and I helped them on that. When they were all done, having learned of my intention to return to California, he told me to give him a call once I got back to the U.S. Besides Disney, I was also approached by Apple through a headhunter. Remember, this is around 1980, and Apple did not open its first showroom in Japan until 2003. By the time I was approached, they were looking for someone to interface with component manufacturers like Sony, who was providing Apple with floppy disks. Had my foresight been sharper and seeing the true potential of Apple, it would have been an interesting job to take on. I think I would have been one of the early Apple employees in Japan. Again, showing how ignorant about the world of business and investments around that time in my career, I told the headhunter I wanted to go back to California. And that was that with Apple. Once I got back to LA, I gave Berkeley of Teledyne a call, more of a courtesy call. My intention was to first return to California and continue working for Press Aid Center until I found the next opportunity. Instead, after giving Berkeley a call, he called me back a week or so later and offered me a job. Let me review the timeline here again. So December 26, 1973, I get married. Fall of 1974, I start USC, and beginning of summer of 1976, I graduate from USC and start working for Jetro for a short while, then join Press Aid Center upon graduation. I end up in Japan in mid-1978 and get involved with Boutique America, then work there until mid-1980 and made decisions to return to the U.S., and almost got a job at Walt Disney around that time. And upon return, I started working for Teledyne. Press Aid Center, though it was a small PR and marketing consulting firm, it created openings for me to pursue other bigger opportunities. I am really thankful for that. Had it not been for Press Aid Center and its involvement with Jetro, my life would have taken on a totally different path. And of course, I would like to thank Julie Miyazaki, my dear friend and a good business contact, for introducing me to Jethro in LA. So my next step was Teledyne. Interestingly, about 1 year after I joined Teledyne, U.S. Commerce Department's LA office invited me for an interview for a job. The LA office was headed by a gentleman named Mr. Miyamoto, a third-generation Japanese-American. I have known him in the past, and in fact, after getting out of USC, I talked to him about a job there. Apparently, a spot opened up, and he asked if I would consider it. My bad experience with the commerce folks on board Boutique America was still very much or too fresh in my mind. But I did go to talk to him, but in the end, I did not pursue the opportunity. Again, had I taken this job, I have no idea where I would have headed in the years to come. So I decided to stay with Teledyne, a company based in Century City, founded by an investor named Henry Singleton. Their product line was varied and mixed, from consumer products like AR speakers that many professional musicians use, to Waterpik, synonymous with dental care, and to special steel, as well as aeronautics and space products. I joined Berkeley, one of the pioneers of the company in the area of investor relations. Berkeley managed the entire public affairs activities for Teledyne, including financial PR. My tasks were twofold, serving as the window for the Wall Street analysts, answering their questions, complying with their requests, and producing reports and documents for shareholders and government filing, such as quarterly and annual reports, and as well as more mundane 10Ks and 10Qs. Teledyne had a network of 150 or so subsidiaries across the U.S. with a thriving government contract business in Asia. It was a very busy PR department, just me and Berkeley, with each of us having a secretary, Barbara for me and Linda for Berkeley, both very top-notch personnel. As part of my responsibility, I traveled extensively across the U.S. to interview executives and customers to prepare company reports. It was really a fascinating way to see America from New England to the South, as well as to other very different, distinct parts of the country, giving me the impression that America is not just one unified country, but rather made up of various cultures. Later in my life, I was introduced to a book called American Nations, which showed how this country was made up of 11 rival regional cultures. I believe it. I had the firsthand knowledge of what the author was talking about. There were always two traveling companions whenever I visited a Teledyne company for the quarterly or annual reports. One was Bob McVicker, who was a professional writer, and the other was Maurice, an art director who had a flair for Latin American art. Bob, who was much older than me, I was 30 when I joined Teledyne. He worked at Hakodo in Japan in his prior years, and I don't recall exactly when and how long he was there, but his claim to fame was that he is the creator of the name Datsun, or later Nissan Fairlady sport car. Or maybe he was part of the creativity team that landed on that name. Or maybe he got involved in the later transition of the name and the sports car. Not sure, but he sure knew in details about the development of the vehicle and how it evolved over the years. Datsun Fairlady came on the market in 1959. It sure has a long history. The Teledyne job was very, very interesting. I was learning a lot about industries and finances, especially the whole investment community. It's another brand new field for me. I sure learned how to read financial reports very quickly. Also helped me to develop knowledge and interest in personal finance, which helped me in the long run. As I told Berkeley from the beginning, I was interested in marketing and possibly getting involved in Teledyne's international business operations. About 4 years or so after I joined Teledyne, one day, out of the blue, I get a call from Kei Izawa, a colleague of mine from Boutique America project that I mentioned earlier. Since the project, Zelotan left Jetro and joined General Motors in Detroit. He was part of Overseas Project Development Group under GM's Hughes Marketing and Product Planning staff. He asked if I would be interested in joining him at GM. This invitation was totally unexpected, and it came out of nowhere. At the time, Teledyne also suited me just fine in terms of job location, pay and benefits, career development opportunities, and also social life. Both Aichan and Melanie were well integrated into the California culture and the school system. Chieko with newly acquired friends and with part-time job working for a nearby Japanese restaurant. She was also doing much better. We kind of established ourselves in LA. However, the grass is always greener on the other side, and GM offer did entice me a lot. I took it to Berkeley and also to a few people within the company about the job offer and the idea of working in Detroit. One such gentleman, Charlie Rinch, who was a chief financial officer of Teledyne, said, "Rick, if your idea is to work for someone and not to start your own business or be an entrepreneur, there's nothing wrong in try working for the world's largest employer, General Motors." GM was really big. It employed 750,000 people worldwide and took in close to $90 billion in revenues annually. And its counsel made sense. I also had a colleague, the treasurer at Teledyne, a much younger person, who was actually from Lansing, Michigan. He really saw me on the beauty of Michigan and told me not to turn down the job because of having a wrong idea about living in Michigan. I found out then that Michigan had more lakes than any other state in the country. I told Berkeley, if Teledyne can move me into its international marketing staff, I would stay. Then Berkeley tried, but such opportunity failed to materialize. His last attempt was to transfer me to Teledyne's office in Japan. Because of Teledyne's exhibit following boutique, I was familiar with their focus on business in Japan, which was dealing primarily with Japan's defense agency and its military industrial complex. I really was not keen on that, and the package Teledyne offered was not exactly attractive. The result was I accepted Kay's kind invitation to come to Detroit, do the interviews, and if it works out, join him at GM. Fortunately, the interviews went really well, met with a dozen executives, and I accepted a job offer to go work for GM. Leaving Teledyne and Berkeley, as well as Southern California, for a job in Midwest required a big decision and a bold move. Since coming to California with me in later summer of 1974, Chieko struggled initially. She packed up and went back to Japan a few times before and after we had our first daughter. It was not easy for her to assimilate and also go from being someone active in the field of entertainment to just be a housewife in a strange land with a husband who's always working. And she struggled with her English. We had a lot of bumps at the beginning, but she came back every time. And after coming back from boutique, things did improve and she seemed to be much more content, more active. But unfortunately, this event happened. While I was at work, someone came knocking on the door. It was two Jehovah's Witnesses. It did not take long before Chieko had these people at her apartment constantly and started attending their meetings regularly, weekends and weeknights. She got herself immersed into their world very, very quickly. Her involvement with Jehovah's Witness took our marriage into a whole brand new direction, which neither of us planned or expected. It did not end well. When we signed up to get married, this was not part of our plan. Things happen in life, and this was a life-altering event. It all started around this time. Ever since returning back to California, we lived in a few apartments, but always close to Mom's house. My grandmother, who was a very devout Christian, knew Jehovah's Witness really, really well. In fact, she was doing a Bible study with one of them, and when Chieko got exposed to it, she told her to rethink and stay away from them. She could also see the painting on the wall. Mom was the same. it created a very awkward situation between Chieko and my mom, not to mention my grandmother. I and Melanie, by then around 10, kind of went with mom, or maybe they had no choice but to follow her. And they are today still on the same path. That decision also had a very sad ending. Single, born in 1983, while in LA, of course, knew nothing about what was happening. I and Melanie going with mom without really thinking about how that decision will eventually determine their path to life and beyond. Thinking back, it was a crazy time. It's a difficult topic to bring up, but it is necessary, for it played a big part in shaping my life and how it evolved over the years. This topic will resurface repeatedly as I proceed with the rest of my life story in this podcast. One benefit working for Teledyne that I want to share before I close this episode is that up to that time I joined Teledyne, I had been a smoker. Not a heavy one, but definitely habitual, one pack lasting over 2 days, perhaps. When I joined Teledyne, I also joined this running club, which got together during lunch. We ran from our office to UCLA about a mile and a half one way almost every day. Next thing I know, smoking started to taste foul, and I eventually kicked the habit in my mid-30s. Over the years, when I find myself at an occasion, like at a bar with friends, if my buddy is sitting next to me and smoking, and if I had a few drinks feeling mellow, I would sometimes bum off a cigarette. But fortunately, those occasional relapses never took me back to the nasty habit of smoking. So, again, thank you for listening. Over the past few episodes, lots happened, from getting married to getting ready to start working for GM and everything else in between. It was the beginning of my real adulthood. Met a lot of people that eventually influenced the course of my life. Chieko found Jehovah's Witness, which certainly defined her life and my relationship with the three children. Like I said, Shingo was born in March of 1983 in Northridge, California, a Kaiser Permanente hospital. In the coming episodes, I will be covering the next 30 years of my life with General Motors and everything else that happened around it. I am looking forward to retracing my years and hope to be able to convey to you an accurate portrayal of my involvement with the company that spanned the world, and perhaps reflect on my life to that point, touch on events that led me to this path and how I feel and dealt with it. More of a personal story and not just a description of how my life evolved and moved on. Thank you again for supporting and listening to this podcast. The podcast itself is taken on a very simple framework, just me talking. I certainly want to improve going forward, just like anything else in life. If you're doing it, always strive to do it better. And thank you again for listening.